Thank you, Ms. Engels, for agreeing to do this interview with us. To all our listeners, today we have the topic, the impact of neuroscience on resiliency. Let's delve in straight and ask Ms. Engels. You have such a varied background, and it's intriguing how you switched from the corporate world where you worked in the automotive sector for so long to something so different, like you're a life coach, you're a neurochain solutions coach. Something so different. Can you talk us through how this whole transformation happened? It could be intriguing to a lot of people, I think.
Thank you so much, Lavanya, for inviting me for this talk. Yes, I have been asked this question quite often. And of course, the process didn't happen from one day to the other. It was a gradual process. I have been working on automotive sector for 20 years. But I always had an interest on people. So I started parallel to do a coaching formation, and I started coaching my co-workers. That's how everything started. So 5 years before I left the company what I was working for, I started coaching. I started seeing that this was helping people. I started, of course, taking coaching for myself. So it was also a journey that I took on myself to be more conscious about what I wanted to do, how I wanted to become and to be. So in that process, I changed myself and I was gaining more and more clarity, so that finally it was 2017-18, I had the opportunity to start a new path, as you say, totally different than the path before. It requires, of course, some introspection. Mm-hmm. It required a jump into the darkness a little bit. And because, of course, I was changing from employee to solo entrepreneur, mm-hmm. which is always a risk. But it was worth. And now I feel I'm doing the right thing for me. Right. So just to summarize a little bit, that was the journey.
Uh-huh. Did the change happen like over a long time? Did you think a lot about it? Because like you said, it's like literally jumping into darkness. But did you see light? At what point did you feel like this could be your journey, or no, this could be your destination? Journey, yeah, it would have started a little before, but when did you feel that you could take that plunge?
Yes. It was a really very gradual process that took several years.
Okay.
I would say it took 5 to 6 years. First of all, I started to identify I'm not at the right place. So knowing what you don't want, knowing that you don't like to be here, but you still don't know where you're going to go. So that was the beginning. So feeling some kind of discomfort. Second thing was following the natural interest. My case was coaching, was reading a lot of books about personal growth and transformation. Of course, taking sessions with coaches myself. Mm-hmm. And then while reading, while applying that knowledge that you're learning to yourself, you become more and more clear. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what I did was to prepare the jump. So to prepare the next step. So, and there are many things you can do. There's a lot of information, at least in Germany, how to prepare that roadmap to start a career as a self-employed. So that's a kind of things that I was doing as I was still at my former job. Mm-hmm. So that you can minimize the risk to some extent. However, there is still a portion where you don't know. Are there clients coming? And it takes some time to really, until you get some, until you get known about customers, you have to approach them. So you have to overcome the risk of rejection. And you are working rejection a lot when you're on your way, because normally you have to go for some customers and not everybody's going to say yes to the first time you approach them. So you work a lot of things on yourself on that journey. And if you consider it as a learning journey, you're in the best way. And that's how it is. So it's not from one day to the other. As I said before, it's really a gradual process when you have to keep your goal, your focus on your goal.
Right. That's what I wanted to know. Like, does it happen overnight? Because you kind of think these things a lot. And no, about the rejections. I think if people meet you in person, I'm pretty sure they'd say, no, she's a nice person. Let's train with her. So, yeah, I really like your way of coaching, and I would recommend everyone to come to you. And I had a wonderful session with Miss Engels a couple of months ago. It was different. It was, you knew it. She knew what she was talking about, and it was very practical. So, yeah. Thank you for that. And to all our listeners, I think you should get in touch if you want to. That brings me to the next question, Ms. Engels. Why neuroscience, and in what context do you think it helps people? Like, how can they push themselves towards a change when they know about the neuroscience aspect of resilience and change? Because I think it's more the subconscious mind that has to be involved in the whole decision making than the conscious. Am I right? How do you train your mind to work in a certain way, although you know the neuroscience behind it?
Yes. When we are in the process of change, I would say, let's define change. What do we understand by change? And I would classify it in two kinds of change. There is, on the one side, the change we have to make because our external environment demands that. For example, you're working in a company, mm-hmm. there's a company restructuration, and you have to leave the company. There is not really anything you can do about that. So this is a change that you didn't choose to. Mm-hmm. So this is one kind of change. However, you can modulate how you respond to that change. Yeah. This is always something we are free to choose. How do we take it? And we have a choice. Many people think they don't have a choice, but we have a choice. So this is one change. And then there is the other kind of change. This is the change we design. Mm-hmm. Meaning, same situation, company, we decide to go for a new job. We are the ones that leave the company. It's not the company that leave us. We are the ones that leave the company. So in both cases, the same result at the end. However, we feel and we act and we choose totally different way.
Right.
We move from a position when we are victims, mm-hmm. when we have no choice, to a position where we are creators. Mm-hmm. But we really design that. We really modulate the response, and we have that freedom. So when talking about change, I always try to help people to move to their second kind of change, mm-hmm. which is this creative change, mm-hmm. which requires a little bit self-knowledge of what do I want right. to become? What do I want to be? Where do I want to go? So this is one kind of change which is much more difficult than the other one, mm-hmm. because life drives us. However, the second change is the one that makes us more happy.
Yeah.
So when we talk about the second kind of change, and you were asking about the subconscious mind,
mm-hmm.
we need both conscious and subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you allow me to explain why we need both, I would like to. First of all, you have to use your conscious mind to set an intention. Let's say, I want to leave the company. I want to work in that industry. This is not a subconscious mind. This is the intention, the clear intention from the conscious mind. It requires a conscious effort to think about how you no longer want to be,
mm-hmm.
or what you want to be, how you want to become. So, and then you start making your plans, you start searching for companies that match your position, things like that. This is conscious mind. Now, the second part is your subconscious mind, which is the bigger portion that makes our decisions. About 95% is subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nobody would admit that because we really think we have everything under control. Mm-hmm. However, this is most of the part not the case. The example, if you go to supermarket, yeah, you don't think about taking the chocolate bar. It's your body taking the chocolate bar. It's a subconscious mind. So now what happens is we have been cultivating that subconscious mind for such a long time. The conscious subconscious mind is not going to give up so easily.
Mm-hmm.
So even if we have a clear intention, a determination, a plan, we're going to have some resistance from the subconscious mind.
Right.
So we need to embody the subconscious mind. And how do we do that? How do we convince the subconscious mind? How do we change habits and create new ones? We have to objectivize the subconscious mind. So we have to pay attention to that thoughts, actions, and feelings that we don't want to have anymore, that keep us staying the same. They keep us staying the old personality. So once we know how we no longer want to think, act, and feel, and this is a little bit what happened to me at the beginning. I knew what I didn't want, that I was not clear about my path. And you start thinking about, okay, yeah, that's what I would like to do. But what, how should I think if I want to become that kind of person, or if I want to become that job? What actions should I take? What decisions? How would I feel when I have that? Then you start, you know, designing the path. And it's a back and forth. And when you attended the webinar, you saw that there is some, that feelings, thoughts and feelings are connected to each other,
right.
That we create a continuity mm-hmm. between thoughts and feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if, for example, we think we're miserable, we are complaining all the time, we generate corresponding feelings to that. And when we think the same things over and over again, one day after other, we mm-hmm. create a continuity
right.
that becomes correct. Subconscious.
Correct.
So the challenge is to break that continuity and to create a new continuity with a goal that we want to become. And mm-hmm. this is the challenge. It's like stopping smoking, you know?
Yeah.
You have that idea, I'm going to stop smoking. I start on Monday. Great intention. However, Monday comes and you see a colleague of you smoking next to you and say, okay, just one. So why? It's the body craving that chemicals of smoking. And the same thing happens with the old habits that keep us staying the same.
Right.
So that's why, to show my answer, we need both conscious and subconscious mind to make successful changes of the second type.
Mm-hmm. You spoke about these connections that we make with our feelings and your mind and what you think. So I'm going to drift a little towards that side and ask you more about it. So when I feel, you feel a lot of things during the day, but I or we sort of drive towards negative emotions more than what could work. Say, I want to make this change. I really want to quit this company. But then I'm like, okay, how do I support my family? Or there are numerous other negative things. What if this doesn't work? And I'm sort of more drifted towards it. Is it normal? And how do you train to... Although I know, like what you're saying, if I nurture my positive emotions a lot more, and then I will be drifted towards a change a little more. But does this actually happen? How do you consciously move towards that?
Yes, it's normal. It's not you. We are much more calibrated for negativity than for positivity. This is human nature.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is evolutionary. Means... when we, you know, when we were, I mean, millions of years ago, we had to scan our environment for danger, for mm-hmm. threats. So why? Because if we are prepared for the worst case, everything less that happened, we will be prepared for. So we have a better chance to survive. And that's the reason why we always see more negative information in the news than positive. Yes. Why? Because we want to prepare for whatever is going on in the world. But if it's fine, if everything is fine, we don't have to prepare. So we don't have to know that. Everything is fine. That's why. So it's something that we are designed for, that negativity. And if you take, if you Google, for example, for list of emotions,
mm-hmm.
You will find that there are three times more negative emotions than positive ones.
True.
Because we have been trained for that. So this is one thing. However, many, many times we are too negative when we don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
I give an example. We preoccupied for things that will never happen. We try to, you know, we are being affected emotionally for things that we cannot control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I give you an example, a traffic jam. Mm-hmm. You're in a traffic jam and, you know, okay, you are late for your appointment. You cannot change anything. However, you get upset, you get frustrated, you get angry, you start yelling to the other drivers that cannot listen to you anyway. So these are typical things that people do. However, it's absolutely nonsense if you think about this. Just because you're frustrated, it doesn't make the traffic jam go move any faster.
True.
So in order for us to really modulate that tendencies that we have, first of all, is to think, okay, from all the things that happen outside there in the environment, what are the things that I really can control? Mm-hmm. I cannot control the pandemic. I cannot control the war in the Ukraine. Yeah. However, I can control how this affects me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that we have to be very conscious in that moment that we not respond with our automatic subconscious patterns to see, okay, I'm gonna worry, I'm gonna talk with the neighbor about the prices, the oil prices, everything is more expensive. Yes, it is true. However, you don't have to reinforce that. It's already a problem, so don't make it worse. And one of the things that we do a lot is to create a stress just by thinking alone. Just preoccupating, just imagining the worst thing that can happen. We stay, you know, awake in bed at night,
mm-hmm.
thinking about those things. And these are the things that prevent us from change, out of change. So distinguish when are you worrying unnecessarily? When are you worrying about things you cannot change? And at that moment, you can learn to switch to a more positive mental and emotional state.
Right. So at that time, you're training your conscious mind to take control over your subconscious, right?
Yes, you become aware of your subconscious tendencies,
mm-hmm.
and then you are changing them so that you can really create a new, let's say, a new baseline for resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the traffic jam example, how to train resilience in that situation is to become aware, okay, wait a moment, I'm becoming quite angry right now. However, I cannot change it. Let's move to patience. Could be an option. Let's move to patience. I recall a situation where I was very patient. When you can remember a situation, normally everything you have experienced has an emotion associated with that. So you can lock in to that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So you can lock into the patience. It's a conscious decision you take in that moment.
Right.
In the moment of stress. It's simple to understand and it's not easy to make.
Exactly.
In the moment.
I was just going to say, yeah, I understand this. But when I'm stuck in traffic, my immediate instinct is to think of and get anxious and annoyed. That's like, I think it's become like a reflex that we should all curb.
Absolutely. However, when you're doing this, the first thing is to remember, and to see, okay, I can switch my emotion, to remember that you have a choice. This is the hard part, because the subconscious creates that automatic response,
mm-hmm.
that's frustration and anger. So to catch yourself doing that before you go subconscious, this is the hard part. However, if you train it enough times, you're creating a higher baseline for resilience.
Mm-hmm.
So going, let's say, for 30%, if we would count 25, 30% resilience baseline, you increase in time to 50%, 60%. So whatever happens in the environment, you better prepare. And you don't waste that energy unnecessarily.
Mm-hmm. So it's about creating practices and routines to remind yourself that you don't have to slip into that zone. What could we do to train this? Like, Do you have any examples that you can share? Anything interesting from the corporate situation? Like, we know that when you're going for a 9-to-5 job, things can be tough, or even if just working in a routine job can have a lot of pressure, stress, whatever. Or anything, you can pick anything from day-to-day examples and tell us. It's nice to listen to how we can make that change.
There are many things you can do, anybody, not only corporate environments. First of all is know your stressors. What are the things that push your stress response? So the stressors can be anything outside. However, the stress response is what happens within you.
Mm-hmm.
So people wrongly use the word stress. You know, stress at work, too many appointments, too many telephone calls, long hours. These are stressors. These are things outside that push your stress response, but it's you who creates that stress response in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So when you learn to lower your stressors, maybe you can prepare for them. So if you know there is a certain person in your company that's always very demanding, and you know you're gonna have a meeting with that person, and you can prepare for that. You can simulate the conversation in advance, or you can just cultivate a feeling of how do you want to show up yourself during that conversation, to be patient, for example. So first of all is self-awareness of mm-hmm. your stressors. The best thing to do this is to take some time every day to review your day. Mm-hmm. Journaling, for example, or in the evening, you say, okay, what was the worst thing that happened today? And what was the best thing that happened today?
Mm-hmm.
We fail to review the best things too. So we don't pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when we start paying attention to that, good things too,
mm-hmm.
we start to express gratitude for the things that went well. We're focusing our attention also from the negative to the positive.
Okay.
And you're changing also your internal state. So this is one thing I would recommend. Self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
When you know your stressors and when you know the things that give you energy, that give you that positive emotions, and you know what situations are connected to that emotions, then you can start spending more time with doing the things, being around the people that give you that energy, that gives you that positivity.
Mm-hmm.
So you balance your energies in a more balanced way.
Right.
So there's some things you really can start doing. And another thing I always tell to my clients is, it's not just for us. We're not doing this just for ourselves. It is true that wherever we are broadcasting to our environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So negativity, you know, can be sensed by people. You enter in a room,
mm-hmm.
in a meeting room, or in an office, and you, sometimes when there is conflict, even if nobody says a word, you can feel it.
Tension, yeah.
So, and that's also think about that we are broadcasting all the time, subconsciously, messages.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you want to broadcast to your environment? This is a question, not only at work, also in your family environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you want to send to your children, to your family? You have a responsibility for that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And mostly people, you know, they get some help of that thought because they see the side effects of their behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. The people around you, the environment is the one that gets affected the most. That's very true. Like most of the times you end up releasing all that taste pressure and tension on people around you, and which is not the most healthy way. And we need to start making that change within ourselves for sure. Anything else that you would like to add, Miss Engels, from your journey, or something that you would like people to know and that would motivate them? If not, we can wrap up and call it a day.
Yes, well, what I would really recommend to start doing that journaling or review every day, or even during the day when you notice you're getting anxious or sad, you pause for a moment to just start observing yourself, how you're doing, and to see if there is a way to change, especially that emotional response. This is the key to emotional intelligence and resilience. And so this is one thing I really encourage. And what I see when I do this with a team or with my clients, it takes some time until you change that baseline, about minimum of 3 weeks, for some people a little bit longer. But then you start noticing different results. You start noticing that when the same situation comes, you are not that reactive anymore. Or even that you receive comments from people around you telling you, I don't know what happened, but you're more quiet, you look better, you're more warm, you're more calm. And this is where people notice that they have changed most of the time.
Okay. So others look at your behavior, and the way that others look at your change is the first indicator, I see.
Yes, because it has become subconscious in oneself. Yeah. So it's for us, ourselves, hard to identify.
True. I think if we make it a better place for ourselves and others, it's the best thing that we can do. So it was really a wonderful conversation with you. It's been like amazing. I think I've touched all bases and asked you everything that I wanted to. Anything that you would like to tell our audience on what you offer and how they can get in touch with you, we can probably end the session with that.
Oh, thank you so much, Lavanya. Yes, my focus is on neuroscience and physiology, and I offer trainings for corporations, companies, teams, but also for any individual on resilience, so how to manage my emotions. On change, a personal change, professional change. I'm certified neurochange solution consultant by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And I'm also have a master in neuroleadership at a neuroleadership institute. To have leadership programs on feedback conversations, leading teams, goal setting and goal pursuing. So any kind of leadership topic from a neuroscience perspective. And you can contact me. I think, Lavanya, you're going to share the ways people can contact me. So I offer a 30 minutes free discovery conversation to anybody interested in three languages, English, Spanish, or German. And I will really be happy to talk to you. And from time to time, I offer also free webinars like the one that Lavanya was attending about the neuroscience of resilience and change, many others coming beginning of next year. So just feel free to connect on LinkedIn, where I publish every week. And and I think that was all. Thank you again once more for inviting me to share some information here, some insights and own experience. And thank you, Lavanya.
Thank you, Ms. Engels. It was wonderful. Like I said, the 1 hour interview that I attended was free. It happened around the end of July. And it was really eye-opening in a lot of senses of what I was doing wrong and how I could make that change, which I never paid attention to. That was a starting point on how Ms. Engels is here with us today. I will leave a link to all her contact and her LinkedIn, her homepage, and you can get in touch with her. I can vouch for the time that you will spend, and she's a wonderful person. I'm sure many of our audience will want to get in touch with you. I'll see you guys again in another episode of our podcast. Thank you, Ms. Engels. See you soon.
Thank you so much.